Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolutionary.org Hardcore 2.0 coming your way. This is on episode 53. Today we're going to talk about HGH and peptides with Parapharma. It's going to be a part one episode. Part two episode is going to be episode 54. So definitely check that one out as well. So this is going to be a special episode. We're going to do a full hour, and then we're going to do part two a full hour. So we're going to do 2 hours on this. HGH is such a complex growth hormone. We're also going to talk about a little bit ACG, which Parapharma also sells, but they have an excellent HGH, which we're going to talk about mostly on this podcast. So this is going to be the most modern, progressive, and updated HGH podcast that you're going to listen to. So you're in for a real treat on this one. We're going to give you the latest information about HGH. We're going to talk about the pros, the cons. We're going to talk about Paratropin 100, which is an excellent kit of growth hormone that's been shown to be legit and has been tested by many people and at the university level to prove that it's legit. We're going to talk about some of the side effects with HGH. We're going to talk about how to use it, whether you're an average Joe who just wants, you know, some athletic increase and fat loss and some lean muscle mass, to if you're a professional at the highest level and you want to abuse the crap out of HGH to reach heights. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff on this. It's going to be a really fun show. So let's get into it. Let's first, you know, touch on Parapharma a little bit, Mobster. And Parapharma, you know, they have a lot of good stuff that they sell. They've got orals, injectables, ancillaries, during cycle stuff, post cycle stuff. They have excellent products they have certificates of analysis that are recent. I think the latest certificate analysis I saw was like a year and a half old. So most of their stuff is like within a year. Their growth hormone is excellent. They have the Paratropin 100 IU by Parapharma. The price of it is not bad at all. Way cheaper than it would cost you to go to an anti-aging clinic and overpay $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 for a kit of HGH. Theirs is much cheaper. You can go and check out how much they're selling theirs for, but it's way cheaper than something that you'll pay going to an anti-aging clinic. And look, at the end of the day, it's commonly known as somatotropin. And it comes in a 10 vial, 10 IU packaging. We're going to get into more about Paratropin in a second and exactly tell you what, you know, how to mix it and all that stuff to make it simple for you when you do order it. But first, let's talk about Parapharma overall. And Parapharma has been around for over 12 years. And Parapharma, look, they're an excellent brand for anabolic steroids, for HGH, and for everything else you want. And they're so easy to use. You just order their products. They have very easy payment methods that are safe. They ship out the products safely. They know how to get it to your door safely. We've had zero issues with people not getting packages or anything. They know what they're doing, and that's very, very important. They also have excellent customer service and an excellent, excellent rep team that's always there to help you on the forums. And that's really helpful as well, Mobster. I think that's very important to have competent reps that if you do have a problem, let's say you have a problem with your payment, or you have a question about your shipping, or you have a question about a product, you're not sure what to order, that you can reach out to them on the forum or post on the forum and ask, and people will respond to you. They won't be assholes to you. They won't be unprofessional. I've seen that a lot before, but they're very professional. They're very patient. And that's something you need to have as a rep, because you're going to get asked the same questions day in and day out. And a lot of people don't have the patience for that, but they do. And, you know, they got you covered. So Mobster, jump in there.
Yeah. I mean, what I tend to do on these shows, Steve, is I would echo a great deal of what you've just said. And in fact, I think they're coming up on 14 years now, Steve. So I said on previous shows, the reason why a company like Parapharma becomes a great brand and trusted and so on and so forth is simply just lasting, because we've seen labs come and go. And you don't get to last unless you're producing solid product. You don't get to last unless you've got a great reputation. It's very easy to have a wonderful reputation if I send you out a bunch of free stuff. And the first products that come out are absolutely amazing. I can think of a particular brand of supplement back in the day that was laced with Ephrogen, a very, very famous brand. And people were absolutely raved about these first 10,000 containers that went out. Lo and behold, the second batch and the third batch and the fourth batch did not contain this amazing stimulatory fat burner, and of course the results weren't quite as good. So, you know, the reputation was based on a falsehood, a truth, if you like, at the beginning, but a falsehood later on. So this can happen a lot with labs and so on and so forth. So you want a company that's producing solid product day in, day out, basically giving a shit, and understanding the idea that it's all well and good making a few bucks up front and then ripping off whatever. But in order to build a brand, in order to build a reputation, you need to be thinking long-term. When you're talking a decade plus in our industry, that's actually, as we say here in the United Kingdom, that's going it some. It really is. I've seen brands come and go in 9 months. I've seen brands that are very popular for a couple of years and then they disappear and something else comes along. The other one might still exist, but for whatever reason, people have changed their mind. For you to stay with a brand, for you to know that that brand works for you, especially when it comes to performance-enhancing drugs, is super, super important. And the other thing I would touch on, and this doesn't apply to every single podcast we do, because we talk about a multitude of products, multitude of PEDs, and so on and so forth. I have used Parapharma products. I run their CalStack 150 products. I had, as Ali G would say, great success. Borat has had great success on that particular CalStack. I run a log on the forums, which you can check out to see how we got on with it, how I felt when I was using it, and so on and so forth. So for me, and I got that via one of the resellers, probably the fastest shipping I've ever had. And in fact, just this week, there was a thread on the forums. I think someone got their product in 3 fucking days, Steve. I don't know. I don't think I've seen a single post ever that's gone from sale to front door in 3 days. 5 days for me was going it some. And 2 weeks is typical. So that's the kind of level of service you're getting both from the parent company in terms of being a great brand and trusted, et cetera, and respected. And the companies that are representing and reselling their products are really trying to be as absolutely professional, as fast, and work with the customers as they possibly can, both in terms of customer service, like Steve said, from the company directly, and then talking to the reps as well. So you will see various forums, not just the Evo family forums, but various forums where you want the people that represent the company to be as professional as the company itself. And again, that's how you get a brand to be a big deal. I'm just thinking of huge high street brands known worldwide, and they would have had employed reps that go to shops and supermarkets to sell their product. If you turn up and you're an arsehole, I'm not going to buy from you. I need you to be on point and professional. I need you to know about that product. I need you to be experienced in using that product. And that's, again, what makes a great brand, a great lab, products from that company. And then, of course, as Steve said, you want those products to be effective. You want them to work. I have personally experienced Parapharma products, and I know that the Parapharma product that I use works. So for me, that's a great indicator. You know, that's how this stuff works. That's how any brand or company. We've got a section on the forums where we've seen representatives of companies and would-be suppliers in the Australian market come and go just in the last year, Steve. That's no good. That's not what you want. It's a very, very tough market in Australia getting the product in. And I can, on that particular forum, I've seen companies come and go inside of 12 months where people are working with and the product's great, and then they've disappeared, they've scammed, they've taken the money and then run away. It's just no good at all. So yeah, for me, Parapharma, trusted, approved, recommended, and I've got positive personal experience with their particular products. Yeah. Let's talk about, go on.
I just want to make sure too, people don't know, because Parapharma, you can go on their website. One of the cool things, you can do a supplier check. So if you're going to buy Parapharma from a reseller, obviously you're going to go on there and you put it in, but make sure that you put in the full address. Don't just put in
correct domain, etc. Yes,
you got to put in the dot whatever, and then that it will come up. But what's cool about that is you can double check, because you might see Paraforma out there being sold, you know, by whatever, someone on Facebook could be selling Paraforma. You want to make sure that you're getting it from a legitimate reseller, a gold reseller, a approved reseller, and then that would get you where you want to go. So you can come on the forums if you're unsure, and you can always check with us as well and make sure you're getting it. But as Mobster said, it's more than 12 years. It's now 13 plus years. By the time you listen to this podcast, it'll be 14, 15, 16 years.
Yep.
45 different products and 30 different types of products. So 30 different APIs. So really impressive with Paraforma. They have so many different options. And, you know, they get their stuff. It's very important. They have a GMP factory that they make their products in. And this is like buying something from a pharmaceutical company that's being, you know, looked at very closely with a fine microscope.
Yes.
And they pass, they do testing on their gear before they even send it out to be sold. And that's very important too. So this isn't a situation where it's some dude in the middle of nowhere in a trailer baking, you know, this gear. And then he's not even testing it. He's just selling it. Because let's be honest. He's either A, too lazy to do that. Or B, he's too cheap to do that. Or C, he's too stupid to do that. So he'll send out. How many times do we see these guys over the years that have done that? They just make their own gear and then they sell it. And then people find out that it's 50% underdosed, or it's not even what they say it is. They don't even test their powders.
Contaminated, completely fake, Steve. Loads. Yeah. I mean, I'll touch upon the phrase that Steve used just now was GNP. I've talked about this on another show, Steve, when I said that when I had my supplement company, we would have product made for us. We would buy the whey protein and we would have it packaged, et cetera, et cetera. So that and something else that I've been involved in the food factory environment many, many years ago, my late teens and early 20s, was I was aware of industry standard means of proving that a company is reliable, that they hit certain standards in how they produce product and so on and so forth. And this is super, super important in two industries, really, when it's in terms of human consumption, and that's fairly obviously food and drugs. Now, other companies would have higher standards, manufacturing and so on. So here in the United Kingdom, we have something called ISO 9001. But it's not actually the gold standard. There's something that the supermarkets do, the name of which escapes me, where they can literally tell you what farm the product came from, when it was packaged to go from the farm to the factory to be packaged again. And it's tested at every single stage. Samples have taken of that food at every single stage, right the way up to and including on the supermarket shelf. And that's the complete traceability. So the GMP thing, in simple terms, is that the company that's producing these products, whether that's food or in this case, PEDs, growth hormone and so on and so forth, hits certain standards that are industry approved. They have to have this standard. They literally won't give them, they won't allow them to use that name or title connected with the company, connected with the product and how it's produced. It has to be super clean. It has to have certain cleaning standards. There has to be records of when cleaning processes took place, records of when tests were taking place and so on and so forth. So this is 100%. And something that Steve said at the beginning of the show as well, and I've touched upon this when I've talked about some of our other approved sources as well as Paraforma, I said that I love the idea of the certificates of analysis, independent, in-house, by, as we've talked about on other shows, Steve, literal members of the forum that spent money to have products tested. You want that. You want that as a company. You almost want the challenge as a company, because you go, if we test it in-house, we could be called biased. If we send it off to an independent lab, we're still biased because we could have selected the product. So you almost want randomly taken from the production line, from the shelf in the warehouse of your company. These then go to a lab, which has, again, certified, has to be approved up to a certain particular level, because otherwise you might as well bribe them and be done with it. So no, that has to be tested. And then the ultimate test, which Steve and I have touched upon, is this idea that products being brought from a reseller, direct from the brand and stuff, or whatever else, by a customer. And that customer has been, we almost say to guys, you don't really need to worry about it because we got you covered in terms of how we approve sources, the way that we recommend brands and so on and so forth. These guys, they're borderline anal, but in a way, they're great because they have literally brought a product and then sent it off to a lab themselves and had the product tested. It's not cheap. This can be hundreds of dollars per item, a vial of testosterone, some intravenous units of growth hormone, and so on and so forth. And the products are coming back. We've seen those test results posted. And as an example, and I'm going to generalize a little bit here, I believe the person in question that we're thinking of, well, Steve and I are doing this show right now, had 8 or 9 products tested, something like that, Steve. So several hundreds of dollars a product. And then again, that's several hundreds of dollars, probably more, to have each item tested. And every single thing came back positive, meaning it was almost on point in terms of milligrams per milliliter of the testosterones. Every single thing contained what it's supposed to contain in terms of this. I brought cypionate, it contains cypionate, it doesn't contain anything else, and no zero contaminants, et cetera, et cetera. So pretty much every single thing that we was approving, that we recommended, ratified, this person had brought and had tested from their own wallet and paid for out of their own pocket, and boom, every single thing came back great. Parapharma will be included in that. In-house testing, independent lab testing, and even customer testing coming back on point. That's exactly the stuff that we like. It makes things real simple. In fact, it's saving all the other guys that are about to pony up for the test. They don't have to do it. This person's done it. The company's done it. Labs have done it. So yeah, that's exactly what we want. We didn't used to see this in the industry 10, 15, 20 years ago. We see it more now. And I'm glad to say, Steve, that all our approved sources, including Parapharma, are on point in this particular regard because they want to serve you, the customer, with solid product for the next 20 or 30 years, for the next how many decades they want to stay in business, Steve. Back to you.
All right. So let's get into what human growth hormone is. So, you know, first off, you got to remember that human growth hormone is not an anabolic steroid. It's completely different than an anabolic steroid. So we got to get that out of the way first. And keep in mind, when it comes to using these types of products, that you've got to realize that. And human growth hormone isn't going to do the same things anabolic steroids do. Anabolic steroids do a lot of different things than growth hormone. So it may not fit what you're looking for. So we're going to go over all of that and try to give you the facts. And also keep in mind with human growth hormone, we're going to talk about using it solo. We're also going to talk about what you can stack with it with Parapharma products to get the most out of it, because it does work very well stacked, although it's not required. So what is human growth hormone anyway? If it's not an anabolic steroid, it's not a drug, like what the hell is human growth hormone? So let's explain it to you here. It's specifically a peptide hormone. It stimulates growth on the cellular level. It is a protein which has endocrine functions in living animals, and it's synthesized in cells from amino acids. So growth hormones, they stimulate cell reproduction, they stimulate cell regeneration in humans and animals. In the fitness world, we have used it for many decades now. And really, once human growth hormone got into bodybuilding, that's when we saw bigger and more ripped dudes. And HGH is a big reason for that. There's also other reasons like the trend use, the insulin use, and stuff like that, which we're going to talk about in this podcast. But it made a huge difference in otherwise, even if you're just an athlete, we know that athletes are using human growth hormone. The nice thing about human growth hormone is because it is not an anabolic steroid and it's not a drug, that you can take human growth hormone and in a day or two, it's going to be out of your system and not detectable. So it's hard to test for it. You'd have to test for it immediately. That's why when you want to know if your growth hormone is legitimate by getting blood work done, you got to take the growth hormone that morning, then you got to go in and you got to time it properly to get your testing done. If you wait, you know, if you go in too quickly to get it done, or if you wait too long to get it done, you're not going to get an accurate number, and it's not going to show that the growth hormone is in your system. We've seen people go get tested, and they're like, oh, I took growth hormone, and 2 days later, I went and got my lab work. Well, are you serious, dude? Like, it's going to be in your system that morning. It's a pulse. So you're not going to see it in your blood work 2 days later, 3 days later. It's not like anabolic steroids where you take anabolic steroids, you take some testosterone, 500 milligrams of testosterone, and you go get your blood work done. You're going to notice a change from before and after. You're going to see a big spike in your testosterone levels. No, this isn't how growth hormone works. So it's completely different. Go ahead, Mobster. You want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of things here, Steve. So something that just occurred to me, I remember reading about this years ago when it comes to the test. So as Steve says, and I'm a fan of the Iron Game history, as Steve knows, with a huge collection of magazines and books going all the way back to the 1900s. So I'm well aware of, as Steve has implied, the difference we've seen in bodybuilders from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. And I would say that growth hormone really, really sort of went into overdrive by, if used by professional bodybuilders, male, female, and athletes outside of the Olympics, probably around the late 90s, Steve, when it went absolutely crazy. And as Steve implied again, the use of growth hormone, insulin, and trend, 80s and 90s again, was where we saw the differences between the Frank Zane physique and the 300-pound Rammies, et cetera, that we know of today. And there's literally, you could argue about better knowledge with regards to training, better supplementation, and so on and so forth. But anabolic steroids, for example, really haven't changed in the last 30, 40, 50 years, maybe longer. The steroids that worked back in the 60s still work now, absolutely. But growth hormone and insulin, and to a lesser degree, trend, were kind of game changers. And you see that in the physiques. There were very few, and I mean a handful, Steve, of 300-pound bodybuilders back in the day. And these were not professionals. They didn't have the pro look or whatever else. In terms of the Olympics, and this is what stuck in my mind, I recall seeing this probably 10 or 15 years ago. There was a suggestion at the time, because it's so goddamn difficult to test for, as Steve just said, that they were going to ask the pharmaceutical companies that were producing growth hormone to add a marker to their product, so that when it comes to Olympic testing, what we call WADA, W-A-D-A testing now, it would be easy to see the marker. But that never really happened. And of course, it also encourages athletes to go underground instead of any medical products from a pharmaceutical company, et cetera, versus a UGL. So it for whatever reason, it never really, really happened. There are ways of testing for it in terms of, as Steve said, if the timing's wrong, comparing it to natural levels, what would the level be typically in a person of that age, and so on and so forth. But even that's a bit silly, because an athlete tends to be, at the Olympic level, a very rare individual. So we know that the testosterone levels in sprinters can be quite high. And we know that people that are incredibly fit, eat incredibly well, rest well, get massages, and so on and so forth, i.e. professional sports people, would imagine have higher levels of growth hormone just naturally before they do those things and then the actual sport that they're involved in. So it becomes incredibly, incredibly difficult to test for. So yes, Dave, I mean, like,
yeah,
I said,
you can take a look at Frank Zane from the 1970s, oh, yeah, and Marcus Rule, yeah, from the 2000s as an example of what growth hormone has done, and what trend has done and what insulin has done. It's really a concoction. We're going to kind of explain how HGH works in a second. You'll kind of understand why a lot of guys like to use insulin, and they'll use trend with it, and you're going to get huge and you're going to get ripped at the same time. It's really fascinating the way these chemicals work together. And they just didn't have access to these things in the 70s. Really, in the 70s, they only had access to 4 or 5 anabolic steroids. That's it. And you could get so much of it. It wasn't like you could get a ton of it. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just how it was in those days. You could get it from a doctor. He'd give you a certain amount. He wouldn't give you a ton of it to abuse it.
I'd even argue, Steve, in terms of the use previously, and I'm talking about when it was introduced, historically speaking, and we will get into this specifically in terms of the dosages, et cetera, that we know professionals, bodybuilders especially, are using right now. But I would also suggest that historically, even when it was introduced, the amounts that were being used 20, 30 years ago versus now have changed. So I don't think, because I'm a big fan, as you know, so I'm thinking of Muscle Media 2000, Bill Phillips magazine, the roundtable discussions with people like Dan Duquesne and so on and so forth, and the conversations they were having, and even the experiments that Dan was doing with the female and male athletes that he worked with. And I'm quite happy to be wrong on this, but I don't think they were talking about much over 10 units a day. And we know that those dosages have changed. So again, this is the reason why you've seen an explosion in the sheer size. Well, I think you and I discussed on one previous show that the athletes we saw on stage, Frank Zane 180, Arnold at 225, it is absolute fucking best. And then we've got short athletes that are hitting that kind of number now, and the real big ones that are 300 pounds. So the difference in size, again, let's just use Arnold and then talk about Marcus that you just said. You're looking at a 75-pound fucking body weight difference. That's another very small human being on top. That's literally half of Frank's body weight and maybe another couple of pounds. Again, over and above Arnold, it's another 120 pounds more than Frank Zane on stage, in condition, in an ideal situation and scenario, and a very short period of time, historically speaking. So again, just as a fan of the sport, you do wonder what next in terms of maybe myostatin inhibitors or whatever else, but it's definitely been a game changer for bodybuilders, weightlifters, and certainly a great many athletes at the Olympic level. And I would actually argue in terms of recovery, and we'll get into that as well, with, for example, pro American football, ice hockey, basketball, and so on and so forth. So at that level, for various reasons, we're also going to touch upon. But just to use the American football analogy right there, Steve, they are bigger. They are bigger than they was in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They are just that much bigger. And this is not just one or two individuals, but the whole fucking team is bigger. So, yeah, just that. And that isn't just genetic diversion. That isn't just having more people in the sport. That is literally, whether they care to admit it or not, the PED use, and specifically did they growth hormone. So, yeah, absolutely, Steve. Back to you.
So let's talk about anabolic steroids versus growth hormone a little bit more and kind of give you the science behind it. And one of the main things that separates anabolic steroids from GH is that GH is capable of using mitogen to help you grow. And mitogen, what it is a chemical substance which encourages cells to grow and divide. And so one cell can turn into two cells and so on. Anabolic steroid just takes the cell and causes the cell to grow, the muscle cell, helps the muscle cell to grow, breaks down barriers for the muscle cell to grow. But growth hormone specifically can split them and grow them. So that's very unique. And at the end of the day, you got to have some perspective. As Mobster said, you're looking at 1,800 pound different in these guys. And who knows, maybe in another 25 years, guys will be 400 pounds Mobster and 6% body fat. We don't know. I mean, it's possible because of the way there is a demand for this type of physique and this.
Yeah, if they ever produce a true myostatin inhibitor, Steve, you can guarantee because Steve and I talked about this, it would need to be site-specific and kind of actually short-acting. But if it ever happens and is effective, then absolutely companies like Paramount Pharma will put that product out there. And I can see another 50, 60 pounds of muscle on a few individuals, and certainly 20 or 30 pounds on the shorter guys.
The reason why... the reason it's going to be tough to pull that off is because if you are getting that big, you're shortening your lifespan significantly because you don't see 250 or 300 pound guys who are 80 years old, 90 years old. You see them dead by 50, 60, 65 years old. So that would be the reason. So if you can kind of find a way, you'd have to go both ways. You'd have to find a way to grow, drop that myostatin and then cause that growth. And then you'd have to find a way to also keep a person alive because, heart, the liver, the kidneys, the brain, all these things.
Site-specific, Steve. It needs to be site-specific and it needs to be short-acting. It can't be long-acting. As an example, and I don't want to go too much off subject, the Belgian blue cattle, which have a gene where the myostatin is essentially, if not completely uninhibited, it's uninhibited to some degree. And I think there's one other breed of cattle where they have this quote-unquote double muscle. They tend to last about 4 years. So although they can be quite placid, even though they're fucking massively muscled and huge, and you can Google the pictures for yourself, listener, to see what these look like, they don't last very long. So site-specific and short-acting makes the most sense for various reasons.
That's why they do that before slaughter. You know, they get the cattle big before slaughter.
I'm just talking about natural lifespan, Steve.
But we talk, you know, when you're cooking like a slow cooker, or you do like a smoker or something, oh, it tastes so much better. Everyone says, oh, it's than cooking something fast, like in the microwave, right? If you take a steak, you stick it in the microwave for 3 or 4 minutes and you cook it that way, it tastes like shit. But if you slow cook the steak on the grill or in a slow cooker, it tastes so much better. So this is kind of the same thing, where the farmer wants his animal to grow slowly, but then at the very end, before he sells it, he wants to make some extra money. So that's kind of the idea here. And, you know, it's kind of sad that we're comparing human beings to cattle, but it's essentially what it is. Because as we talked about, it would not be possible today, Mobster, for these guys who are winning Mr. Olympia, top three, top five, even top 20 Mr. Olympia, to even be on stage without the help of growth hormone. And we're going to talk about the kind of dosing these guys are doing, but it's insane the type of dosing that they're doing. And as we talked about, you know, we're going to talk about as well fakes, all the fakes that are in the market.
Let me touch on that now.
Let's talk about growth hormone first before we get into it.
Well, no, let me touch on that just for a second. You mentioned something at the beginning, and I've actually mentioned this in another show. So relative to the cost of some years ago, the price is about the same. But because of, obviously, the way that finances work, it's actually cheaper now than it's ever been. But back in the day, a month's supply of growth hormone, and I'm talking about 10 years ago, was $500. And that's, as an old motherfucker, I can say that's when $500 was really $500. Not so bad now. It could be a couple of days' wages. But it means relative to what it used to cost, it's cheaper. However, it's still around that kind of price. And for some people, that can be, if the way used properly, and certainly used as a professional, you're looking at quite a few bucks on a monthly basis. So the reality of the situation is that what can easily be an inert white powder, that in its powdery form might be difficult to test, but certainly you can't test for it at home. There's no sort of HGH version of Roy test, for example. It could be very, very easy to get ripped off. So you absolutely want some company like Parapharma with Paratropin 100. Again, as we touched upon earlier at the beginning of the show, especially if you're going to do this properly, especially if you're going to run it for the kind of effort time that people typically do, you want a product that is absolutely on point, tested, sampled, tested by customers, and so on and so forth. Because again, relative to what it used to cost, $500 might not be that much anymore, but we're still looking at a certain number of bucks. In fact, it's probably less than 500 now, Steve. I'm just using that as a generalization. Yeah, back to you.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about growth hormone naturally in the body. And, you know, just like when we take anabolic steroids, we're taking exogenous hormones. And what we're doing, our body naturally produces hormones. Obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you know how it works, but let me explain it really quick. Your pituitary glands, they produce your LH, your FSH, those stimulate your Leydig cells. That produces testosterone, which converts to estrogen, which feedbacks back into the pituitary glands, and the cycle continues. Now, when you use anabolic steroids, it signals to your pituitary glands, wow, we're getting excess hormones. Doesn't matter. You don't have to use testosterone for this to happen. You can use any anabolic steroid across the board, with the exception in some cases of proviron, which is more of a drug. But with almost 95-99% of anabolic steroids will cause suppression of your pituitary glands. Growth hormone is different. Growth hormone is a pulse. So we get pulses of growth hormone throughout the day. Now, one of the things, obviously, just like with testosterone levels and regular hormones and even estrogen, all this stuff, there are environmental factors that may be beyond your control, and some things maybe within your control that will cause growth hormone to be poor in your body. Now, we know as you get older, obviously, your growth hormone is much, much better when you're younger. That's when you're growing. That's why they give growth hormone to children who are having growth issues. And in fact, there's some rumors that some NBA players, their parents gave them growth hormone when they were younger, which caused them to rapidly get taller. But that's a segment for another day. But when it comes to growth hormone, as you get older, obviously it drops much more quickly than your testosterone levels do. So as you get older, it becomes harder to recover from certain things. You age, you do a lot of the stuff that growth hormone fights against. So it's a pulse. So when you take growth hormone exogenously, it's not shutting you down the way that anabolic steroids shut down your reproductive system, your HPTA. In fact, it doesn't affect your fertility or any other things the way anabolic steroids will. It won't blow out your HPTA the way anabolic steroids will. So it's very, very important to understand the difference. It's a pulse. So you're getting pulses. Now, how do we get pulses? And I'll bring in Mobster in a second. The best, the way you cause growth hormone in the body to rise is in a fasted state. The longer you fast, the more your growth hormone goes up in a linear fashion. It's not even up and down like the stock market. It's straight in a linear fashion up. This is why when you're fasting, you don't lose muscle tissue. Your muscle tissue holds when you're fasting. That's the misconception a lot of people have out there who have argued against fasting. Like, oh my God, you're going to lose your muscle. No, you're not, because your growth hormone rises beyond any level that it will ever rise at, starting at about 20-hour mark. So after 20 hours of fasting, your growth hormone marches higher and higher and higher and higher. All the way for the 5 straight days, it goes higher and higher and higher. When you eat, your growth hormone comes down. Same thing overnight. When you're sleeping at night, your growth hormone begins to rise. The next day, when you eat breakfast or eat lunch, your growth hormone tanks back down. This is why growth hormone, we're going to get into how to dose in a second. A lot of people say the best way to use growth hormone is before you eat your first meal of the day, because your growth hormone has been going up during your fast, however long you've been fasting overnight, and then you eat your meal and it comes down. So you want that growth hormone exogenously as it comes down. So that's how you boost your growth hormone. And then obviously, I'll let Mobster get into it. Having a healthy lifestyle, working out, all this stuff helps you. And then stress. Stress is a huge, huge underrated thing. And I'm not talking about just mental stress of life, of modern life, you know, things like, you know,
physical and mental stage,
But
physical
also, I'm not talking about physical and mental, just that, but I'm also talking about food stressors, liquid stressors, the water that comes out of your faucet, the chemicals that stress your body out, and the foods that are stressing you, all these additives in our food, all this preservatives in our food. When you go eat a cold cut from Subway, the bread is full of additives and preservatives. The actual meat that they put in your sub is full. The condiments are full of it. That all stresses you out. So obviously, if you're eating fast food every day, that's going to have an effect on not just your growth hormone, but also, of course, your hormones in general. So these are things that we can do. And this is why we're seeing a lot of different issues. Now, the pituitary glands, just like anabolic steroids, they are responsible, before you bring you in, Mobster, I just want to make this clear. They are responsible for producing growth hormone. And it's two sections, the anterior and the posterior. So growth hormone is secreted by the anterior part. So at the end of the day, we know overall, you want to, you know, be active, exercise. You want to, you know, be sexually active. You want to avoid these chemicals as much as you can. Unfortunately, most of America, I don't know if it's the same way in Britain, Mobster, but in most of America, the water that comes out of your faucet is toxic. It's full of things that don't belong in our body, chlorine and all that stuff, which allows us to not die from it, because we won't get like food poisoning, or we won't get water poisoning and die from it, from drinking it like other countries. But the problem with it is it's so treated that they overtreat it so much that they're putting chemicals that don't belong in our body. And these are forever chemicals. And these you know, get inhaled and these get consumed, and this causes the issue. So the first thing you can do right now, if you want to boost your growth hormone, is look throughout your house, look under the sinks, get rid of all these chemicals, the Cloroxes, the cleaners and all this stuff, and don't keep them in your house. And if you do clean with them, you want to make sure you air out your house, because I'll clean with them every 2 weeks. Very, very little. I dilute them and I make sure I air out my house. I have a filtration system and throughout my house that I turn on, and that filters out clean air from outside. But you want to do as much as you can. It's impossible to get away from it entirely, yes, unfortunately. And we're at the mercy of our parents growing up. A lot of you may have grown up with your parents feeding you fast food and garbage food, and there's really nothing you can do about that. But you can control what you can control. So that's very important. And sleep is very, very important. In fact, I'd say sleep may be one of the key factors when it comes to growth hormone big time. Because again, when you're sleeping, you're fasting. And when you're sleeping hard, your growth hormone gets even stronger and rises even more. So that's very, very important to get a good night's sleep. Go ahead, Mobster.
Yeah, I'm going to run through a few points and expand on some of the stuff Steve's just been talking about. So for example, the kind of training that I do, which is, I mean, actually, I say that because I take my motherfucking time. I don't do a lot of volume in my strength type workouts. And if I did them quicker, I ran the 45 minute mark and kept it in the Mike Mensa / heavy duty style, which is the low volume, high intensity type stuff that I do, even though I take my time. That's actually very good for growth hormone pulsing. Something else, Steve. In terms of suppression, and I'll touch upon this, and it was only because there was a bit of a back and forth between an industry expert and a medical doctor, and it was interesting in the way that they were talking about. So there is some suppression, but it's temporary. Literally, imagine that there's a very small tap dripping away in your body. When you take a growth hormone from outside, the tap is shut off, but not for a very long period of time. So when we talk about suppression, normally when we're talking about testosterone, what we mean is fucking weeks, right? As opposed to an hour or 2 hours or the time that we took it. So while it does stop the body producing its own growth hormone, it is very, very temporary in comparison to, say, testosterone use from outside, where you could literally be talking days, weeks, months, and so on. That's a whole another matter. So there is some, but it's very short periods of time. Absolutely. I'm a big one on the stress, Steve, and I'm going to touch up on this. And my life is very simple. I'm more or less retired. I do these shows with Steve. I do have a bits and pieces, but at my leisure. And I keep my life real, real simple in certain particular regards. So being more or less retired means I don't have to do the daily grind. There's no commuting to work and so on and so forth. I could do other things. I could work more and make more money and have nicer toys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then that's kind of an issue for a lot of people, that they end up stressing up motherfuckers to pay for shit. They're constantly doing those things that are always tired. They only rest when they retire at 60 odd years of age, 70 years of age. They worry about keeping up with the Joneses and the guy next door for the car, the bills, the satellite dish, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Take all that crap off the table, Steve, and simplify your life and just have the things around you that are important, and you have less stress. And literally, in terms of just going to the gym, doing your shit in the gym, which is a kind of stress in and of itself, but it's a positive one, and taking the other crap off the table means you recover quicker. You're not tired from work. You're not tired from having to take the kids to school. You're not tired from having to do errands after work and so on and so forth. You're not tired from arguing with your partner and so on and so forth. All of those things are, to put it crudely, a pain in the fucking ass, and they will affect your mental levels. But again, here we're talking about physical levels. And trust me, they will fuck with your testosterone and they will fuck with your growth hormone. If you're, as Steve said, if you go organic, I've actually, again, I'll touch on this again, Steve, the food stuff. And this is just a little tiny snippet of how things work in the food industry. So I worked at a company, and the number one product that we produced was the British sausage. Various companies, big supermarkets, Tesco's, Waitrose, a couple of other companies, Safeways, I believe. And food industry stuff talks about mouthfeel and texture way more than it does health and organic. Trust me. Do you want a stomach that's got taste and feel like a sausage without actually being a sausage? And if you think it applies to sausage, it applies to a ton of food. So the what we would call organic, homemade, locally produced, etc., real fucking food isn't perfect. It's blemished fruit that comes in, the vegetables that come out of the ground are blemished. They're not perfect. They're not covered in fucking wax and washed and presented a certain particular way on the shelf. They're not coated in chemicals. They're not fast grown with chemicals. The stuff is healthy and is. And I'll touch on this one as well, Steve. We've mentioned in previous shows that the Food and Drug Administration in the United States literally has shown that food that was produced in the 1950s was better for you with more minerals and was healthier for you than the food that's coming out of the ground now. Never mind artificially created food, et cetera, and the stuff that I've talked about with mouthfeel and texture and synthetic chemicals and God knows what else. Again, seems like a bit of a diatribe, but the healthier you eat, the better your hormone levels will be. That makes fucking sense, Steve. There's no argument there whatsoever. And just as an example, the difference between the UK and America. Steve said, this is not uncommon, especially in rural areas. And I'm thinking because I live kind of close to rural areas, just up the road. We have a policy here in the United Kingdom, Steve, and specifically here in Wales where I live, where the farmers that have farms near our reservoirs of water cannot use certain chemicals near those reservoirs in case it leaches from the soil into the water and into our water supply. And it's still going to be filtered when it comes through the reservoir before it goes into the pipes and is delivered to our house from the tap. Whereas Steve said, you've got chemicals that have gone down into the groundwater. That's the water that's stored underground and then piped back up. You literally have, if you live in rural areas, you almost need to have a under the sink filter coming into your house. That's how bad chemical contamination is in the water supply. Literally, what we would encourage you to drink on a daily basis, especially for performance enhancement, keeping you hydrated, and you can't trust the fucking water that's coming up out of the ground. So pollution, and I've worked in London, so a big capital city, full of pollution, covered in grime and grit from a day standing, waving my arms around in front of big industrial traffic. And just know how bad that shit was, Steve, and how much more healthy I am the further away I get from cities and into the countryside and so on and so forth. So again, it sounds like a diatribe. It sounds like we're on a thing and people have got to do what they've got to do when it comes to work and income and where the business is and so on and so forth. But the more organic you can, the more healthy the lifestyle, less stress, the less pollution, these things are positives because they will produce a better hormonal level in you. And that's just in natural production. Back to you, Steve, for the next section.
Yeah, so let me just add this too about eggs. And it's very important because a lot of us eat lots of eggs. Now, I have these people, they'll argue, some of them, they're very ignorant. They'd be like, well, it doesn't matter if you buy pastured eggs, caged eggs or whatever. It's eggs and eggs and eggs. They'll argue that. But here's the thing they're not understanding. They're like, why should I pay more? Why should I pay more, Steve, for these high-quality eggs when I can get the same amount of protein in this low-quality egg? So I'm going to explain this to you. We had, in America, we had a big outbreak of some type of avian virus or whatever. And they actually had to, we had a big egg shortage. And this has happened like two or three times, since the pandemic in America.
Yeah, here too, man. Here as well.
So people were going to the grocery store and there was no eggs. And there was one year around Easter, no one could find eggs. And I had a neighbor, asking me, I can't find eggs anywhere. Can I find eggs? And they couldn't find it. And it was funny. The one place that had eggs, Mobster, was Whole Foods. Because Whole Foods, most all their eggs at Whole Foods are pastured, where the chickens aren't in cages and aren't stuck in barns 24/7. So if the chickens are outside in the sun, they're healthy, their immune systems are healthy, they're able to eat worms off the ground and seeds off the ground, and the sun, the vitamin D, they're healthy, then you don't have problems with these avian bugs, the super bugs that are making these chickens sick. So if everyone just shopped and bought those types of eggs, we wouldn't have a problem, and the price of those eggs wouldn't be high in the first place. So essentially, you're going to end up paying more for your shitty eggs if you keep buying them and keep supporting those farmers that, as Mobster said, are not only putting out these crappy eggs, but also polluting the water. So everybody's going to end up winning and everyone will end up paying less. In turn, those cheap eggs ended up costing more than the pastured eggs because the cheap eggs, there was a supply and demand issue, you see? So anyone who ever tells you, oh, it doesn't matter what kind of egg you get, it's the protein, you know, that's just telling that story because it's ridiculous. It's the same thing with beef, grass-fed beef versus real beef. We have a rancher on the forum. He has grass-fed beef. He explains, he said, I will never sell beef that wasn't grass-fed. We've been ranching for hundreds of years. That's how it's supposed to be done. Cows are supposed to eat grass. They're not supposed to be grain-finished and stuck with their heads and vices inside barns because the farmer's too cheap to hire people to let the cows graze and buy land to let the cows graze, you see? So if you stop buying the low-quality shit, those farmers will transition to high quality farming. We'll have more quality food, but don't hold your breath on that because everybody wants to save a buck. And that's how it is. So you have to control what you can control and you know what to get. So if you want to boost your natural hormones and all this stuff, that's what you have to do. So, you know, that's how it is for sure.
Yep.
So let's get into paratropin 100 IU. We touched on it a little bit earlier. So basically when you order this, it's going to get to you. It's a kit. So right away, as soon as it gets to you, you want to put the kit in the fridge. Now, it's very, very essential after you reconstitute any peptide, including HGH, that you put it in the fridge. But also, even before you reconstitute it, it's important to get it into the fridge because it will give it a longer shelf life. So do it. If you leave it on the counter, you know, at room temperature before it's reconstituted, look, that's okay, but it's better in the fridge. So I highly recommend you put it in the fridge carefully. So it's going to come in 10 vials and each vial is 10 IU. So it's going to be 100 vials total. 10 times 10 is 100, obviously. So what you're going to do is you're going to have to reconstitute this stuff. So a lot of people like to use backwater and you can buy backwater online. It's like $3 for a whole vial of it. It's fine. And what you want to do, what I like to do, Mobster, is I'll take a really small slim pin and I'll extract the backwater and I'll very carefully, you don't want to
hit
the powder when you're injecting it. So I'll kind of turn it at an angle and I'll put the slim pin at an angle into it and like drip the backwater into the vial to let it drip into it, right? And then you don't want to like shake it. It's not like anabolic steroids where you can like shake anabolic steroids and it's not going to affect it. These you want to be careful. So maybe you move it a little bit slowly to each side.
Swirl it
very carefully. You don't want to shake it. You don't want to be aggressive with it. And then you go ahead and it's ready to go. And whenever you're ready for a new vial, then you can reconstitute it. You don't reconstitute all 10 vials at once because the shelf life is going to be lower, you see. So you reconstitute one at a time. I know it's a little bit of a pain, but you do one at a time and then you store it in your fridge. And when you're ready to use it, you use it. So that, I mean, that's as simple. I mean, I can't explain it any more simpler than that, Mobster.
Yeah, let me touch on that very quickly, Steve. I mean, look, peptide hormones are relatively fragile, say, for example, compared to testosterone. They might not be that fragile, but again, if I'm going to pony up several hundreds of dollars for a month's supply, and I'm going to be running for several months, ideally, as we'll get into, I want to get my most bang for my buck. So, for example, these should be properly packed, which they are, and present it to you at your mailbox. If you live out in an environment where it's fucking hot in the summertime, get to your mailbox as soon as the item turns up. Do not freeze. Do not expose to excessive heat. Do not treat like a protein shake, like Steve said. I mean, it sounds a little bit over the top. But again, several hundreds of dollars, you want to get a maximum benefit from it. You don't want to get 80% of the solution to work. You don't want to get 40% of the solution to work. You want to get 100% of the solution to work. Only prepare in advance what you're going to use. Do not prepare 2, 3, 4, 5 days. That doesn't make any sense to me. 1 or 2 days at the most. There is a famous video, edited and unedited, of Jay Cutler's fridge. I think they were doing the Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and there were peptide hormones in the fridge door, which were edited out of the next version of that video. But that's where they were kept. The cool, out of sunlight, and again, properly prepared. Don't be aggressive with this product. There are videos on YouTube.
Take the light bulb out of your fridge too. That's just to be safe, Right? It'll give it an even longer half-life if you
want
to.
Get inside and
your
see
wife,
if the light
your
works
wife
in the
is
door.
gonna kick your ass for that shit, right? Like,
Yeah,
why
I mean,
is
the
the fucking
obvious.
refrigerator? What's wrong with the refrigerator? Oh, I took it
Every
out.
time I open the door, the light's on. What's going on? Yeah, I mean, is it on when the door's shut? Look, guys, I mean, at the end of the day, we want you to get the best value you possibly can from your paratroping. We want you to get the best results you can. So this is about proper preparation. Come onto the forums and 100% check out guides, whether that's how to measure, whether it's how to prepare,
So
and so on and so forth, and of course, our own videos.
let me get into measuring a little bit. Now there are peptide calculators online you can do, but listen, I believe in keeping shit simple, and there's no reason to complicate this shit. Each vial is 10 IUs. So let's focus on that 10 IU vial. So you're
Yes.
gonna basically take, you should be using slim pens. The slim pens have little lines on them, right? They've got 10 numbers and the little lines on them. So if you extract backwater and you carefully put it in, now, no matter how much backwater you put in there, whatever is mixed, right, in that vial, half of that vial is going to be 5 IUs because the whole vial is 10 IUs of the
Yes.
liquid. A quarter is going to be 2.5 IUs and so on. And if you want to do 1 IU or 2 IUs,
That's
so
it, yeah.
extract up to go with the lines. If you want to do 1 IU injection a day, it's going to last you 10 days. If you want to do 2 IUs a day, it's going to last you 5 days and so on. So you extract based on the little lines on your insulin needle. You don't want to use a big 3 cc syringe because the lines are further apart, and you don't want to use
Steve,
that one because it's going to be
this
too
is one of
fast.
those things that the first time you do it, it can feel complicated. And because you've just got the growth hormone or insulin or other peptides, you want to be real careful and you want to make sure that you're doing it properly. Once you've done it a couple of times, you'll sit there wondering why you thought it was real complicated. And especially as Steve said, when there are peptide calculators online, there are guides on our own forums, articles that you can look at, it tell you how to prepare these things and so on and so forth. Like I said, so by all means, do the research because you want to make sure you're doing it properly. Ask Steve. I've seen Steve give this advice multiple times. I'm with Steve, keeping it real simple. And literally, the second or third time you've done it, it will be, as we say here in the United Kingdom, a piece of piss. But you will want to do it properly the first time. So it can be like, okay, what do I need to do? Do I need to look at a video? Do we need to come on the forums and ask? I can't work out what this means. I can't work. Guys, we got you covered. Come and check us out. Make sure you're 100% on that. And like Steve said, real simple. And you're only going to be preparing the 10 IUs that we talked about. You're not going to be preparing a whole kit. That doesn't make any sense for the reasons I stated earlier. So make sure you do that. We have heard of people that have gone ahead and prepared 2 or 3 days. If you are, for example, a professional bodybuilder, you might want to prepare 20 or 30 IUs. And again, we're going to get into that. But that's different. That's still all going to be used in that day. But for the average Joe, this is not the case. So yeah, make sure you check that out. Anything else to say before we finish on part one?
Yeah, so there was a point, there was a time, 10, 15 years where I can remember where it was impossible to get legitimate growth hormone because there weren't anti-aging clinics on every corner. And even if they were some anti-aging clinics in some big cities, they wanted to charge you a fortune to get growth hormone. So people were buying growth hormone and having to dose the crap out of it because they'd have to dose 6 IUs just to get 1 or 2 IUs out of it. So we go back to the paratropin. This is high quality GH. So you'd be shocked at how much lower. I've had clients use this stuff and they come to me and like, Steve, I know you told me to use 1 or 2 IUs. I'm just an average Joe. I'm not, a professional or anything. I know you told me to do 1 or 2 IUs, but I wanted to use more. I read on the forums you should use 3, 4 IUs. So I started using 3 or 4 IUs and now I have carpal tunnel. And I tell them, I was like, dude, because this is high quality shit. It's not like when you're the stuff you're reading from 10, 15 years ago, back then you had to use 5 or 6 IUs just to get 1 or 2 IUs
You
out of
didn't
it.
know what you were
Yeah.
getting. The whole monkey
Crap.
brain story. And again, back in the day, professional bodybuilders, would-be bodybuilders were getting product from HIV patients that were selling surplus growth hormone because they were being given it to help hold muscle tissue on their HIV infected bodies and so on and so forth. So, the average person in those days, and I've done research for buddies of mine with Crohn's and colitis, the typical user was spending $500 each. As I said earlier on in the show back in the day, you don't need to spend that kind of money now. It's slightly less. It's again, carpal tunnel is an issue. it's actually a great indicator in a perverse way, Steve, that the product you've got is legit. And so Steve's quite correct. People were using 4-5 RUs because that's what they'd read, found that they were getting carpal tunnel, which is the tightness around the wrist because of the thickening of the tendons going through the membranes and the actual literal physical tunnel made up of tendon tissue. And these were swelling up because of the growth hormone, because of the high use that people didn't realize they had, and were causing restrictions. It's very, very similar to repetitive strain syndrome that typists were getting from using their hands constantly and clicking on the keyboards all day long. But you don't want that kind of sensation when you're training down a gym. You don't want that when you're trying to build up a muscular body. So it was in a perverse way an indicator that the growth hormone was legit. And so when we talk about a dosage, which we will get into, you don't need massive amounts to get some of the great benefits from using paratrophin growth hormone versus perhaps using a low grade or poor product or the fakes, etc., that were produced both recently and even back in the day for various reasons. So yeah, absolutely, Steve. Any more before we finish for today?
No, that's it. So check out our part two that's coming up. We're going to continue this podcast and we're going to cut it off now. And then if you want to listen to the rest of it, make sure you check out the part two episode, which will be Hardcore 2.0 episode 54. All right.
Yeah, we're going to talk about what pros do, the benefits for bodybuilders and the aging, the benefits for athletes in terms of recovery from injuries and so on and so forth. So make sure you check out part two. We're going to talk more about paratropin itself. And again, the ideal, the average Joe use, pro use, everything you want to know, and even the potential for cancer and so on and so forth if you use it or misuse it, should I say, and even arguments about lifespan and all that kind of great stuff, good skin, all the kind of things and reasons that people are using it for. Please note, we are not doctors and opinions are ours. It's our view based on our experience and views on the topic. A podcast for informational purposes and entertainment only. The freedom of speech and the First Amendment.